We are doing Megillat Rut, and I'd like to begin with a quick overview of the Megillah, just so that we should be familiar with the story. There's tremendous depth to this Megillah. On the one hand, our sages tell us this Megillah doesn't have halachot in it. This Megillah is primarily here to teach us the value of chesed. That's the main point of this Megillah. The Megillah teaches us of the chesed that Rut did, that Naomi did, that Boaz did, the value of chesed, how much Hashem values chesed. We know it's customary to read Megillat Rut on Shavuot. Our tradition has it that David HaMelech was born and passed away on Shavuot. So the Megillah ends telling us the lineage of David HaMelech. There's more depth to this concept of our recounting that David HaMelech came from the Moabites, that David HaMelech came from Rut. That's something which we will Be'ezrat Hashem discuss. I'd like to quickly run through the Megillah and then we'll start again and try to add depth. Our Megillah really does not tell us at what time period we are talking. It begins with telling us it's the time of the judges, a period that spanned over 300 years. And there are different opinions as to when exactly this story occurred. The beginning of the period of the judges or towards the end. We have a man named Boaz, who we don't encounter until towards the end of the Megillah. And it is unclear whether his real name is Boaz or his nickname is Boaz. Maybe he's someone else. Maybe he's Ifton, the leader of the generation. Which leads us to ask, well then why is he given either the nickname of Boaz or Ifton? Why not just call him by his name? And our Megillah begins with a man named Elimelech, whose wife Naomi and two children, Mahlon and Chilion. There is a famine in the land of Israel, and he travels out of Beis Lechem, Yehuda, to the fields of Moab. Elimelech passes away, his two children marry Moabite girls, Orpah and Rus. And then his two children, Mahlon and Chilion, pass away, and the woman is left alone. She comes to return to the land of Israel. She's heard that the famine has passed, and the two daughter-in-laws go with her, and she tells them, go back. May Hashem do kindness. You've done kindness with the deceased and with me. May Hashem give you each that you'll find peace in your husband's home. She kisses them. They all cry, and they say, no, we're going back with you to the nation. And Naomi tells him, no, go back. Why should you come with me? You think I have any more kids in my stomach to give you? Go back. I'm too old to get remarried. Even if tonight I met a man and married him and had children, are you going to wait for them? No, that's not right. Go. I'm in such a bitter state. God's hand has come out against me. You go back and get married. They weep again. Orpah kisses her mother-in-law and goes off. And Ruth remains. And Naomi tells her, look, your sister-in-law left. She went back to her idol worship, to her nation. You go back with her. And Ruth says, no, 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 don't get me upset. Don't tell me to go back. Where you go, I go. Where you sleep, I sleep. Your nation's my nation. Your God is my God. Where you die, I die. I'll be buried with you. Naomi told her the different laws of Judaism, and she says, whatever it is, I'm with you. Only to death do us part. And Naomi sees that she really wants to be with her, so they go together. They come to Beis Lechem. And the whole city sees him walk in and they say, is that the famous lady Naomi? And Naomi says, don't call me Naomi, which means pleasant, Naim. Call me Mara, bitter, because God has made life very bitter for me. When I left here, I was so well off. And now I'm coming back empty. Don't call me Naomi. God has testified against me. He's harmed me. And she and Ruth come back and they come to Beis Lechem. It's the beginning of the period of harvest. And it's the holiday of Pesach. Now, Naomi has a relative named Boaz, her husband's relative Boaz. And Ruth tells Naomi, let me go gather the amount of wheat that's the poor get that fall from, the halacha says, if when someone's harvesting some wheat full, the poor are allowed to take it. There are laws of leka, chik, chapea. She happens upon the field of Boaz. And Boaz comes and he sees this exceptional girl. She's dressed not Jewishly, she's dressed like a Gentile Moabite girl. And the lad tells him, oh, that's Ruth who came with Naomi from the fields of Moab. And here, she's here from the morning. Boaz goes over to Ruth and he says, you stick around by my field. You stick around with my girls. You look over what they do and I told the lads not to touch you. If you're thirsty, come here and drink from what they draw for themselves. And Ruth thanks him and she says, why are you giving me a special treatment? I'm from Moab, a nation that's not even accepted in Am Hashem. Ruth became a Gioras thinking she could never remarry. She says, "I'm. Why do you even treat me well? I'm from those that Hashem says can't even marry into the Jewish people." And Boaz tells her, I've heard everything that you've done. And I know that really you are allowed to marry into Judaism. So in their first meeting, Boaz tells Ruth, you can find the shidduch. Ruth tells him, I can't get married. Why are you giving me special treatment? I can't even marry into Judaism. And Boaz tells her, sure you can get married. The halacha is that females could get married. And I heard what kindness you did to your mother-in-law. And you left your father, your mother, your religion, your nation. You came to a nation you didn't know about. Hashem should pay you back for all you've done. Rus is obviously very happy with the news he's given her. And Boaz tells her you could come eat with the food that we have here. And Boaz tells the lads, make sure you drop things near her. Make sure she walks away with a lot. And she comes home and she has a lot. And her mother-in-law sees it. And she's left over some of the food to give her mother-in-law. And her mother-in-law asks her, where'd you go today that things went so well? So she says, I was with a man named Boaz. And Naomi tells her, oh, God is really helping us out. He's really our relative, and he really is from those that should be redeeming us. And Ruth tells her, you know, he told me to stick around with his lads till they finish harvesting. And Naomi tells her, stick around with his girls. Don't go to another field. So Ruth listens to her. We notice that Ruth, as much as she's become Jewish, is unfamiliar with the concept of tzniut. Ruth keeps saying, I'll go with the guys. And Naomi and Boaz tell her, no, you stick with the girls. To her, it was like second nature. What's the difference? The guys, the girls, I mean, when you don't grow up in a religious environment, so you're used to all kinds of things. And they tell her, no. In Judaism, you collect after the girls. Now, Naomi, they finished harvesting. They're nearing Shavuos. And Naomi tells Ruth, you know, I want things to be good for you. Boaz is really our relative. He's going tonight. He's threshing his barley. You put on your Shabbos clothes, your beautiful clothes, wash yourself, put on your perfumes, go down to the granary, and when he finishes eating and drinking and he goes to lie down, you go uncover him and lie down next to him, and he'll tell you what to do. So Ruth says, you know what, whatever you say, I do. You're my teacher, you're my rabbi. If you say that's what I'm supposed to do, okay. She goes down and she outsmarts her mother-in-law. She says, if I put on all my beautiful clothing and in the twilight evening hours I go out after showering and wearing all my nice clothing and jewelry and perfume, well, people are going to think not nice things about me. I don't need guys trying to pick me up on the street. So she says, no, she outsmarts. She does one better. She takes her clothing with her and she finds a modest place. She goes down to the granary and she gets herself set up over there. And after Boaz eats and drinks and sits down to learn the way a person's supposed to do before they go to sleep, a person's supposed to end his day with Torah, begin his day with Torah, she goes, she sneaks up and lies down next to him. Comes the middle of the night and he suddenly realizes there's someone lying next to him. So he's scared stiff and Ross tells him, shh. So Boaz says, who are you? So she says, I'm Rus, your maiden. I want you to spread your wing over me because you're supposed to redeem me. And Boaz says, blessed are you to Hashem, my daughter. Your kindness, your last kindness is greater than your first kindness. You could have gotten a young man to marry. Marry someone poor, someone rich, but not an old man like me. Boaz was an old man at that point. So now, don't worry. Whatever you say, I'll do. Everyone knows that you're an Ashes Chayil. But the truth is, there's someone else who has first rights. He's supposed to redeem you and the field that your family had to sell out of poverty. Sleep tonight, and in the morning, if that relative redeems, fine. And if not, I will. Wait till the morning. So she waits till the morning, and Boaz had taken a vow that he's not going to do something improper with her. And from here we learn that a person sometimes has to swear against his yetzer. And that's why Boaz got the nickname Ivtson. He's known in Shoftim as Ivtson. That's the Shofet. What is Ivtson? Ivtson is Av, father of Mitsunanim, those that are cold. In Chazal, when a person has a lot of desire for women, he's called Mechuma. He's in heat. And when a person controls his desire and his desire isn't controlling him, he's called Mitsunan. So to speak, he's a cool person. His desire doesn't get the better of him. So Boaz, when the rabbis heard that he was in such a test. The young lady comes and lies down next to him, and she's interested, and no one knows, no one's around, no one's going to know what happened. And Boaz takes a vow, I ain't touching you, no, we're going to do this right, and we're going to see if the other guy who has first rights, he wants to marry you. And if not, then I marry you. So they called him Ivtson, which is an allusion to the fact that he, so to speak, is the father of all people who were cold, cool, cool, calm, and collected, could control their yetzer. Yeah. She had been converted already. We're going to discuss her conversion. That we'll do when we do it more in depth. So he tells her, we'll see in the morning. Early in the morning, he sends her out. He says, I don't want people to know you came around here. He gives her 6 stalks of barley, and that's symbolic. We'll discuss that when we do it more in depth. And he comes to the city. She comes to her mother-in-law, and her mother-in-law asks her, okay, what's up? And she tells her what happened, and she says, he gave me this to come home to you with this. And Naomi understands the symbolism, and she says, stick around. Now, you don't go out today. Today we wait to see what he does, because he's a man that's not going to wait till he ends it today. Today we will know where things stand. Now, Boaz went to the gate, because in those times, whenever you had an issue in court, you went to the gate. The courts used to sit in the gate. The cities used to be walled. And you couldn't enter or exit the city without going past the gate. So he's assured that when the person who he wants to speak to wants to go to work, so this morning he's going to have to go out that gate. So Boaz is waiting there. And when he passes by, Boaz calls him and says, sit here, Ploni Almoni, you relative of mine, Tov. And Tov sits down there, and they take 10 of the elders. And Boaz tells him, look, the halacha says that if a relative sells a piece of land, so his relatives have to purchase that land. So our relative Elimelech, well, he had a piece of land that his wife Naomi had to sell out of poverty. And I said that I'll ask you, do you want to redeem that piece of land? We have to buy it back for the family. That's the halacha, that the family is supposed to buy it back. Do you want to purchase that land? And if you don't tell me, I'll buy it. I'll know that I'm next in line. You have first rights to buy that property. The mitzvah is first for you to do it. So the man says, yes, I'll purchase that land. I'll buy it back for the family. And Boaz says, fine. But it's a package deal. You want to buy back that land? You also got to marry the wife, the Almana Rus, that she's left without a husband, and really we're supposed to marry her so that she has children to maintain the name of the family. And the man says, I can't do that. Because there's this new halacha that the Moabite women are allowed to enter Am Yisrael. I'm worried if I marry her, people will say things about my kids. Oh, their mother was a Moabite. And in truth, his worry was a true worry. When David Amel started moving up in the ranks, so people started talking. They said, he's not even fit to marry a Jew. He's from the Moabite Rus. And there was an argument generations later. There was a discussion. Do we accept David as one of the congregation? So the man says, I don't want to destroy my family. You want to, you do it. I don't want to redeem. So they make a deal. And here we have an institution of a contract that they seal the deal by exchanging either the shoe or the glove. And that's the kinyan of chalipin. You'll notice in marriage ceremonies, they ask the chasn, you want to take responsibility for taking care of your wife and everything it says in the ksuba? So he says yes. So they give him a handkerchief. What are we doing? We're saying, when you take this item from me, you're in essence also taking the responsibility for all these monetary issues. So this form of a contract that you give someone an object, and when he accepts that object, he's saying, together with this acceptance, I am accepting these legal obligations, this monetary transaction will also take place, that was enacted over here. Now, Boaz tells the nation and the elders, the people that were standing around, you guys are all witnesses that I'm going to take the field and I'm the one that has a right to marry Rus, and everyone agrees that they're witnesses. And they bless him. May Hashem give this woman who you're marrying, like Rachel and Leah, that these two built the house of Israel, and may you have success and have a famous name in Beis Lechem. And your house should thrive like the house of Peretz from the children you have from this girl. Because Boaz had many children, tens of children, 70 children I think it says, and they all died. Boaz was left childless at this point. So they told him, you should rebuild your house. And the children from this woman should be those that rebuild your house. And Boaz marries Rus, and that night they live together, and she becomes pregnant. And Boaz dies the following morning. and Ruth is again in Almana, and Ruth is going to live a long life now. She lives to see her great-great-great-great-grandson Shlomo sit on the throne. And when Ruth has a child from this union with Boaz, so they name the child Oved, the one who maintains his faithful servant to Hashem, which is really a reference to his mother. Who's to thank for all of this? Ruth. She was faithful. When her sister-in-law, Orpah, went off the track, she said, I'm not remaining with the religion. So Ruth said, no, I'm going to be Oved. I'm going to continue my service of Hashem, regardless of the price. Just one second. And Naomi, her mother-in-law, helped her in raising the child. The neighbors always used to say, it's as though Naomi had another child. And his name was Oved, who was the father of Yishai, who was the father of David. And then the Megillah ends by recounting the lineage of David, starting from Yehuda's son, Peretz. From Peretz all the way down to David. And now we have to begin with a little bit more depth. Yeah.
Naomi's husband, I forgot, what's his name?
Elimelech. We'll get to that.
And the kids married.
Let's, 1 second. So that's what we're going to discuss now. So let's begin our Megillah again. Vayhi bimei shefot ha-shoftim. It wasn't the time that the judges were judged. That the people looked to the judges, and when the judges would try to tell them you did something wrong, the people would say, who are you to tell me I did something wrong? I did something minuscule wrong. You did something major wrong. You're accepting bribes. It was a time of Shvot HaShoftim that people looked at the judges and judged them back. What time period was this? So, if we say that, we'll go with Rashi's Pshat, the Pshat that's well known, that Boaz is really Ivtzon, one of the last Shoftim. So then we know that the Megillah, the beginning of the Megillah, is at least 10 years before the end of the Megillah. At the end of the Megillah, we encounter Boaz, and he's the leader of the Jewish people. The Megillah tells us that Mahlon and Chilion were in Chutzlarts for 10 years with their non-Jewish wives. So we know that the Megillah, the period of time that the Megillah will encompass is above 10 years. It's beyond 10 years. Is it 12 years, 15 years? That's unclear. But it is beyond 12 years. So even if Boaz is Ivtzon, the leader of the Jewish people about whom our sages taught us that he's held accountable, he wasn't a good judge, it's not Boaz. If Boaz is Ivtzon, then the one who's the leader at the beginning of the Megillah is the leader who precedes Ivtzon, which is Yiftach. Yiftach is the one that was an Amoritz. He didn't learn. When he went out to war, he took a vow, God, whatever you comes out to greet me, I will offer as sacrifice to you. And we know that when he came back from war, who came out to greet him? His daughter. And he thought he has to give a human sacrifice. He was an Amoritz. And his daughter came with good ta'anot. No, you don't do that. And she couldn't dissuade him. So if the Boaz is Ivtzon, so then our Megillah begins in the period when our leader is Yiftach HaGiladi, who is an Amoritz. And the Jewish people are in trouble. They don't have a real leader who's going to steer them in the right way. There are two other major understandings among Chazal. Some say that the story occurred in the very beginning of the period of Shoftim, when our leaders were Barak, Dvorah, and Yael. And this fits very well with the Medrash that says that Ruth is the granddaughter of Eglon, the king of Moab. Eglon was a grandson of Balak, the king of Moab. So Ruth is a direct descendant of Eglon and of Balak. Okay. And there's another understanding that this is during the period of our leaders Shamgar ben Anat and Ehud ben Geira. And we know that Ehud ben Geira was the one that killed Eglon. So then it really fits that she's Eglon's granddaughter. So at this period, there was a famine in the land of Israel. And we know there were 10 major famines in our history. And this famine comes about, and there is a man named Elimelech. He was given the nickname Elimelech. Why was he called Elimelech? Because whenever there were discussions, he felt deep down inside, Elai Tavo Malchut. I am the leader of the Jewish people, and when they decide to have a king, I am going to be their king. And our Megillah begins by telling us that at the point of test, when things got really, really tough, Elimelech failed. Elimelech said, I can't. Everyone's coming to me. Everyone's asking me for charity. And Elimelech left the land of Israel. He, his wife, and his two children. He was an ish mi beit lechem, from the house that supported bread, Yehuda, to the people of Yehuda. His house was the house that could have given sustenance to the people of Yehuda. The Gemara tells us in Psachim there are four types of situations that the mind is repulsed by them. Arba'a en adat sovaltan. And one of them, the Gemara says, is parnas hamitga'a latzibur. If a person is just being haughty over the congregation, and the Rashbam explains, that means that he's treating them like, I'm the big shot, I'm the leader. But when things get tough, he scrambles, he's not around. So then Chazal say that's something that humanity, the human mind, can't stand. You're taking the position of leadership to rule us. But when things get tough, you're not around to be there by us. Where are the leaders of the land? So Elimelech left. Now, his wife Naomi and his two children Mahlon and Chilion. We see that there is something very disturbing here. Elimelech leaves, his two children marry Moabite girls. So there are two possible understandings. Either we look at them and we say, oh, they're little people. So they marry non-Jewish girls? Oh, he's a little person. So he leaves the land of Israel. But is the Megillah focused about little people? Is a man who's so little fitting to be the next leader of the Jewish people? There are two understandings in Chazal as to how to understand Elimelech, Mahlon, and Chilion. The Rambam paskins that Mahlon and Chilion were tremendously great people, leaders of the Jewish people. And we're going to try to develop that understanding alongside with the alternate understanding. The other understanding is easier to understand. That understanding we'll have to lean on Chazal to understand how Chazal understood this story. So Elimelech leaves the land of Israel with Mahlon and Chilion and his wife. And Elimelech dies. Why does he die? So one understanding among Chazal is that he died because he left the land of Israel. That's why he died. And the Rambam writes that in essence this was some level of Midat Chasidut. That he, on his level, if he left, so he died. The second understanding Chazal give us is that he died because the Jewish people needed him. He could have prayed. He could have changed the tide around. We're going to see that the famine ends when Boaz turns in prayer to Hashem. Boaz single-handedly can change the fate of the Jewish people through his prayer. Elimelech and his children could have done the same. And instead, Elimelech did the exact opposite. Elimelech left, fending for himself. And when the Jews see this person who's been talking like he's going to be our king, that he's pulling out, everyone lost heart. So he weakened the Jewish people when he walked out.
What did they do?
They lost heart. So in Elimelech's exit, there was a weakening of the Jewish people. After Elimelech passes away, so his children marry women that the Pasuk tells us were Nashim Moabiot, Moabite women. And this is a very, very problematic verse. There's a machlokas in the Midrashim. Did these women undergo gir or not? Now let's make this very, very complicated. We're going to try to make it as simple as possible, but there are many, many details here that contradict one another. Firstly, the Torah says we're not allowed to marry a person from Moab. When Boaz, the leader of the Jewish people, married Ruth, so obviously there was a ruling, some 10 years later than where we're holding now, at the end of the Megillah, there was a ruling that Moabite women one may marry. That this prohibition of the Torah, do not marry a Moabite, does not encompass the women. Fine. But when was this enacted? When did the rabbis give this ruling? Was it from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu? Or was it enacted later? Because if we will say that at the beginning of the Megillah it was a well-known halacha that the Moabite women may marry into the people of Israel, so then we could understand that the women underwent giur and they married them. But then, if we're going to go with the route that they went through giur, so then we have to ask ourselves, then why does the Torah call them Moabite women? They were Jewish women. They were Gerim. Do I care if they came from Moab or somewhere else? Secondly, why does Naomi tell two Gerim, if they've already undergone Giur, go back to your idol worship? What do you mean? If they underwent Giur, what do you tell a Ger? Go back to your idol worship. If they're good Gerim, so what's going on here? What's that conversation? And we learn laws of Giur from that conversation between Naomi and Ruth. If they did not undergo Giur, so then how do we have these great leaders of the Jewish people, Mahlon and Chilion, marrying non-Jewish women? That's question number one. If they did not undergo Giur, then what's the whole conversation at the end of the Megillah that Boaz has a conversation, who's supposed to redeem the wife of the deceased? What do you mean? She's not his wife. A guy marries a non-Jewish woman, we have to redeem that woman. She undergoes Giur, she's a new person. What does that have to do with the first husband? What's the concept of Yibum at the end of the Megillah? So whichever route you're going to go, there are questions, and we have to deal with those questions. But each route has its problems. And Chazal, there are different midrashim that go different routes. There are opinions that go this way, and there are opinions that go that way. And we just explained that each side has its own questions. Yeah?
And one question. Let me start to say, when Ruth married Boaz, she definitely converted. We all agree on that, right?
Everyone agrees that by the end of the Megillah, Ruth was a Jew. Right.
So why is King David, or maybe before he was king, is he being named? Is pastor being carried after him? But he's from Moabite.
Because the Torah tells us that if a Moabite converts, he may not marry into the Jewish people. The rabbis in Boaz's time ruled that only a male Moabite who converts to Judaism is prohibited from marrying into the average Jewish populace.
Yeah,
but a female is permitted.
Of course, but everybody knew that Ruth, of course, was a woman.
Right, but not everyone agreed to this ruling of Boaz. This ruling was up in conflict. Boaz, the head of the court, together with his court, gave that ruling. And then as generations went on, it came back into question. It was not adopted as a universal ruling until David's time. And that was the concern of Tov, of the relative, Ploni Almoni. That was his concern. It's a newfangled thing. He says, says it's going
to
last?
How could the elders then give their blessing?
The elders agreed to his ruling. In Boaz's time, it was an accepted ruling.
But when the elders didn't get agreed, then how could the later generations not accept it?
It's a good question. It's a good question. The Zatchem deserves discussion.
Wait, so at that time it was universally accepted?
But it was newly accepted. It's a new ruling. Who said the next generation is going to accept it? You see, a day later, Boaz is dead.
Who's...
Okay. So those are Thursday night questions. They're good questions. But, yeah.
A quick question. Is there a rabbinical opinion that this could be a case of the exception proving the rule? It's sort of an allegory that demonstrates that the Lord uses to teach us the rule and say, now this was an exception for this reason, but in general, we have the a case of someone. That's a slightly different case, there's more layers involved in it, but there are cases that the Torah gives where people go against what we generally know as Ecclesiastes' code.
I think that Chazal understood everything here happened. No allegories. That
well,
the story happened as is.
Maybe not allegorical, but allegorical.
I don't know. It's the midrashim seem to say there are two opinions in the midrashim. One opinion says that it was already accepted in the time of Mahlon and Chilion, and therefore they could marry them if they were megayir them. The other opinion says it was not, that the Beis Din of Boaz gave ruling on that the day before Rus came to the land of Israel, meaning when Naomi left the land of Israel, there was no such ruling. So her children were stuck in a quandary. If they're Megayer, these girls, they transgress the prohibition of marrying a Moabite because this ruling was not yet accepted. When Ruth was Mitgayeret, this ruling was existent, but she didn't know it. Meaning that day, the first day of Pesach, the first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach, the rabbis enacted this ruling that a female Moabite could enter. 49 days later on Shavuos, Boaz and Ruth fulfilled that enactment that was done on Pesach. That's the other opinion in the Medrash. Okay, but either way, it seems to be an issue over here. We see it was an issue in this generation and down to David HaMelech's time. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering, because the facts we know, okay, there are different things, but the facts we know is that Elimelech went to Moab, he died. His sons married Moabite women, they died. Boaz married that woman, she died. And we know from this lineage comes King David and Moshe. It's
so there's a chida and a Ben Ishchai that discuss that Avraham Avinu could only come from Terach and Ovid of Avodah Zarah, who lives with his wife at the peak of her nida, a time when everyone, all the mazikim stay away. They say, okay, nothing good could come out of this, and from that can come Avraham Avinu. So there is this Kabbalistic concept that, so to speak, in order for the good to come to being, so then it has to be at least surrounded by bad, so all the bad mazikim don't touch it. But I don't know anything about Kabbalah, so I can't say it. I don't know. I don't
know. That also be the need for determining what matters in the body.
Does it make a person bad if he's a bad
man? It's really bad that the very concept that you just mentioned could obviate the need to make unnecessary the need to define whether or not this whole concept of marrying all bad women.
Right. That's what they say. That's how they develop the concept. That even when Boaz marries her, you see later on they're going to put it into question. Well, was it permissible? Right. That David HaMelech could only come. Such great things could only come to the world from a situation which is so surrounded with things that seem like sin. Even David HaMelech's own parents. The way his mother got pregnant was a complicated story too. We've discussed it other times.
I have one more question.
Yeah.
People were questioning David's upbringing and therefore his Jewishness.
Well, not his Jewishness, but his lineage, his right to marry into Judaism.
Right. How could King Shaul, offer his daughter, the king's daughter, whoever defies?
So that's that Gemara. Oh, good question. That's that Gemara. That has to be that Gemara and Gemara and Tanis. But again, those are for Thursday nights. We got to get back to our Megillah.
Wait.
Yeah.
Is Ben Nida bad?
Ben Nida, it says that that can affect his traits. We say that when a woman is a Nida, so she's Tamei, so obviously that's...
What does the person...
Ben Nida will, Chazal say that, at least in their time, they were more concerned with it. We know that a Nida is were prohibited to be with their wives when she's a Nida.
No, what is the child going to be?
Chazal seemed to say it has potential for affecting his traits.
Like what?
Chutzpah. Okay.
Oh.
Back to our.
It can be, but can. That's it?
That's the example that's brought in Kala Rabasi, but that's not our discussion here.
It can be turned into. But chutzpah sometimes is a good thing.
Okay. Let's continue.
No, Avram,
tomorrow night is Thursday. Hopefully, we'll have a chance to discuss it. Okay. So. Machlon and Chilion, Machlon marries Rus, Chilion marries Orpa. And how old are Rus and Orpa? So there is an opinion that says that when Rus married Machlon, she was a minor. That answers a lot of questions. If Rus was underaged, and then she underwent Giyur, so if a child undergoes Giyur, they become Jewish. So then when they mature, so then we ask them, do you want to maintain this? We find that when Ruth goes down to Boaz, Boaz refers to her as the Na'ara, the young girl, which seems to indicate that she was a young girl, and some want to say that that was when she became Bat Mitzvah, and that was what Naomi was doing. She was telling her, do you really want to keep all this? Do you want to maintain all these mitzvot? the gear that you underwent as a minor, is that something you want to keep? It's a bit problematic because if you think about it, if we go to say that she became bat mitzvah the day she went down to the field, then that would make her 2 years old when she's marrying Machlon. So that's a little bit extreme. I mean, you want to make her 14, okay. You want to make her 18, 16, but 12, that's like, okay. I mean, fine, I don't know, but that's... the Medrash says that she was 40 when she married Boaz, which means that when she married Machlon, she was 30.
Yeah,
so, but Tosfos does bring this concept that it could be she was a ketana when she underwent her giyur. The only problem is that the Pesukim say they were married for 10 years. Maybe she became a maybe she became bas mitzvah during those 10 years. I don't know. Yeah.
So for the situation with the kids, when they married her, I mean, technically speaking, marriage could be even when she was 2 years old, because they actually married her, she would have been promised for marriage, which means exactly the same thing.
Okay. However, so Machlon and Chilion pass away. And one understanding is because they married non-Jewish women. That goes with the understanding that they did not have a proper giyur. One understanding is that they passed away because they went out to Chutz Laretz. That's what the Rambam brings. The Rambam in Hilchos Melachim says it's prohibited to leave Eretz Yisrael for Chutz Laretz unless you need to do it for learning Torah or marrying a wife or to save yourself from the nations and then come back. Or if you have to do business, you go to Chutz Laretz, but you don't go to live in Chutz Laretz. Unless there's a major famine, even though in a time of famine one may go out if he must, but that's not midat chasidut, says the Rambam, and that's why Machlon and Chilion took dole hador, even though things were very bad in Israel, they died for leaving the land of Israel. Yeah. Seems that way. Yeah. Chazal seem to view it not that way. Chazal say that the psukim indicate that it wasn't that way. The way the psukim are written are there to allude to us that there was a reason, either because they went to Chutz Laretz or because they married non-Jewish women or because they didn't pray for the Jewish people. Whatever, whichever one. There's even an opinion in the Tosefta that says, don't leave Israel for Chutz Laretz because Elimelech and Machlon and Chilion, who left because there was a famine in Israel, died of hunger in Chutz Laretz. There's an opinion that says they died of hunger. And that would explain why in the next Pasuk it says that Naomi came back to Israel. Chazal tell us that the Pasuk indicates that it was on Yom Tov, she was Mechal El Yom Tov, together with Ruth and Orpah to travel back to the land of Israel. Well, if her two children just died of hunger, so then that could be a good reason. She just heard that the hunger's over in Israel, so she's running back. And even though it's Yom Tov, she's going back. But okay, the Psukim do seem to indicate that there was a cause for the death. It wasn't a natural death. It wasn't just they reached their ripe old age.
But if it's not a natural death, then you have to indicate also that they were not a normal person.
Right? Unless you say that they married them as non-Jews, and as the Rambam says, that if one marries a non-Jew, then he gets kares. That's the pasuk says.
If the Gemara says that they died because they lived in Chutz Laretz, how can they actually be? They shouldn't even say that. I mean, they were living in Babel, they were not in Chutz Laretz either.
So two things. There's a difference between leaving Israel for Chutz Laretz, and secondly, there's a difference between one who can live in Israel and one who cannot. And there might be a difference between before the destruction of the first temple and after, or the second temple and after. But the stress is that they left Israel for Chutz Laretz, either at a time of famine or left altogether. There's a difference between leaving and not leaving. So that's why the Rambam says it wasn't pikuach nefesh. Everyone else lived. That's what the Tosefta stresses. It says when Naomi came back, the whole city was talking, Naomi's back. So the Medrash says, the Tosefta says, the Pasuk is stressing the whole city. They left for Chutz Laretz thinking there's a famine, people are going to die. No one died. Everyone in Israel managed. Somehow they all managed. They were all still around. When Naomi came back 10 years later, they were all saying, look, Look at Naomi. That's what the Tosefta says. Rabbi Shimon says in the Tosefta. The Pasuk is stressing the whole city was around, and Elimelech, who thought, I'll save myself by going to Chutzlaretz, so Elimelech died of hunger, as did his children. That's one opinion. Again, that's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who goes with the opinion that says that the women underwent gir. So he can't say they died because they married Nochliot. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai holds that they were Jewish women. So if they were Jewish women, then what cause was there for death? So he says this opinion. Yeah, you want?
We end up, I suppose, with different opinions. No one gives the final halachic solution to all the problems. But is there anyone who points to the over theme of the book, which is Chesed? Can Chesed have play a role in halachic questions like?
So I think that's a nice thought. If we're going to work with that thought, then we could say that it fits very well with the understanding that they should have prayed for their brethren. But they liked this Midav Chesed, and not only that, it's interesting to note that when they turned their back, so to speak, on their brethren, where'd they go? To Moabite territory. What do we see? Why are Moabites not allowed to marry into the Jewish people? Because the Pasuk says they do not have this trait of Chesed. When we went by, they boycotted us. They wouldn't sell us food and water.
And she showed all her traits were so clear. Whatever she was before, she was a very good woman. She didn't look like a Moabite.
Right? Right? So she was the exception.
Some great rabbi in the past over in the, from Tanakhim or whatever, who points this? Because I'm very interested in. To know about this aspect, because it's
which aspect?
The aspect of Chesed in the Book of Ruth, also on the halakhic question of when was she converted, or was she converted, or wasn't she?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know. So, Naomi now has lost her husband. She's miscarried the baby that she was carrying. She lost her two children. And an angel comes and tells her, the famine's over in Israel. It's time to come back. So an angel tells her, to go back in prophecy, even though it's Yom Tiv, she goes back. And when she goes, so her two daughter-in-laws come with her. And they're traveling. And they've traveled quite a distance when Naomi realizes that they're not just accompanying her, they plan on coming back with her. So Naomi tells her, "May Hashem do kindness with you, go back." It's interesting that our Megillah revolves around women, be it Naomi, be it Ruth. And it's interesting that the male and female terminology are interchangeable in our Megillah. For example, in Pasuk Ches, what does Naomi tell her? Yas Hashem imachem chesed, male tense. You two male tense, may Hashem do kindness with you. Kasher asitem, as you two males have done with me, with the mem, male tense. She's talking to two women. She should have said, Yas Hashem imachen with the nun. Kasher asiten with the nun. And we find this a recurring theme throughout the Megillah, that the women, Rus, is referred to in male tense. Not only Rus, in the very end of the Megillah, we find that Boaz gets a blessing. The elders tell him, may your house be like the house of Peretz, may the Hashem give the woman coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, asher banu shiteihem, with a mem. Them two in the male tense, they built the house of Israel. They're two females, Rachel and Leah. So, approximately 4 years ago, I was at an engagement party where Rav Mordechai Eliyahu was asked to speak, and it was this time of year. So he quoted from the Megillah this pasuk, and he said, "You know why the elders referred in the male tense to Rachel and Leah as males?" To quote him, he said, "Because they were both jabariot." They were both powerful women. They were like men. They were they had power. They built the house of Israel. So it's interesting that he said it. I don't know if he knew this source. There's a disciple of the Beis Yosef who wrote a commentary on the Megillah, on Megillah Shiros. And he also, he says, Rabbi Elisha Galiko, he says it on this pasuk, that when the two daughter-in-laws behaved in a powerful way, they didn't take their rights as women, the ksuba. They didn't tell their mother-in-law, well, you owe us the money, our husband's just died, you owe us money. No, they took whatever savings they had and used it to bury the dead. And they stepped forward and said, we're leaving our families and we're going after you and we're going to support you, Naomi. So they took the position of breadwinner. They were behaving more like men than women. So that's why the pasuk speaks about them with the mem like men. That's how he explains it. But it's interesting, you'll note it as you go through the Megillah, that there's a reference in the male tense to the women. So, at first glance, they're both equal. They say, we're with you. Yeah?
How many times do you have in Tanakh referred to females, two females?
I don't know. I don't know.
I know only of this story.
Okay, we have to look. I don't know of him.
How can you say that it's not normal to write in this way?
Let's see. Look in the story of Shlomo when the two women come before him. We have to see over there what it says. We have to see when Yaakov calls out Rachel and Leah out to the field. So he speaks to two women. What does it say over there? There are places where there are two women discussed. We have to see. The two women in Yechezkel's Mashal. Huh?
The daughters of Lot also.
Daughters of Lot. We have to see. There are examples. No, I'm not hearing you again. What, who did?
No, well, David, even Isaac didn't believe.
Yishai, yeah.
Isaac.
No, I just didn't know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I didn't believe that it was his son until Samuel brought him to anoint him. And then he knew, oh, I was wrong, or my doubt is over. Were these women actually Moabites, or were they called?
Which women? These.
Naomi. How can we be sure about that?
So that's
it. In the end, it turns out that they don't act like Moabites.
So it seems like they were Moabites. Chazal even tells their lineage back to Eglon, but there's a Mabit. I think it's the Mabit. There's a commentary in Kiddushin that discusses how could they be Moabites, because if we say that Eglon came from Balak and Balak was a Midianite, so if Rus, her father's father's father was a Midianite, then how come Rus is considered a Moabite? By non-Jews we go by the father. He gives an answer. He says that the decree was against them specifically, against Balak Melech Moab. Even though Balak himself was a Midianite, but he was the king of the Moabites. So the decree was against what Balak and his people did. You can't tell me, well, he technically is a Midianite. Yeah, but the decree was about him. God says, because of what he and his people did, they cannot marry into the Jewish people. So that's a big chidush. But that's discussed. Chazal seemed to take it everyone agrees they were Moabites. There's one discussion about Arpah, because we say that Goliath was Arpah's son, and Goliath was a Plishti. So the question is, how does Arpah, who's a Moabite, end up by Plishtim? So that we're about to discuss. That was going to be the next step. Okay, so Rami encourages them to go back to their mother's home, and the Ibn Ezra proves from this, go back to your home and your family, indicates that right now you're not there. So he says that's a clear indicator that they underwent giyur. That's what she's telling them. Go back from where you are now. And they all cry and they say, no, we're going back with you to your nation. And Naomi says, go back. Why should you come with me? I don't have kids to be your husbands. Go back. I'm too old. You can't have a husband for me. There's a lot to discuss here halachically, but I don't think it's so relevant, so we'll continue. They cry, and Arpah kisses her and turns her oref. What's an oref? The nape of the neck. Turns her back to her. That's why she's called Arpah, and leaves. And that night, she goes into prostitution, and the Moabites say, we're not going to have a girl like you in our midst, and they kick her out. And she can't stay by the Moabites, so she goes to the Philistines, and they're happy to take her in. And she's taken by 100 men and one dog, and from that wonderful union, she has Goliath, and she has 3 other children. And later on in the Navi, in the book of Shmuel, she's known as Harapha. Chazal discussed why she's called Harapha, but that's not for this setting. Arpah is Harapha, who had 4 tremendous warriors, 4 Philistine, the four great warriors of Philistine were her children, and they were all killed by David and his men. And it's interesting how far Arpah went, that her son Goliath is the one that cursed out. He turned to the Creator and spent 40 days walking back and forth between the Philistine camp and the Israelite camp, cursing towards heaven. That just shows us where a person can reach. And the question is, how did Arpah go from being this woman on the verge of conversion? She's standing there at the threshold and she's saying, I want to go, I want to go. And the last time she says, no, you know, never mind. And she turns around. How fast did this all happen? Yeah. So I would like, if possible, to have a special class on this tomorrow night. A class entitled, What's Wrong with Machon Meir? Because this concept, how does a person walk away from something and go to the opposite extreme? Because it's very easy to look back and say, that's bad, and that's bad, and that's bad, and suddenly find yourself at the opposite extreme. And that Be'ezrat Hashem, if we merit to have class tomorrow night, we'll discuss tomorrow night. We're supposed to have class Shavuos by day, so I hope we will finish the Megillah Shavuos by day. I'm hoping we'll have class beforehand just so we could get it recorded and all our listeners can enjoy the Megillah beforehand. We will see. Follow the bulletin board to see if there's class tomorrow night. I don't know yet.